This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. A new mass shooting has steered the country into what's likely to be another chapter in the debate over guns and who has access to them. This time, it was at a Florida high school. A 19-year-old expelled student is in custody, accused of killing 17 people, the third deadliest school shooting in American history. Investigators are dissecting the suspect's social media posts. His former classmates say he displayed troubling behavior. Illinois State University professor Julie Weber says there's more at play in school shootings than inadequate gun control. She's written two books on school violence and argues that the digital revolution has detached us from one another in a dangerous way. Weber tells GLT's Ryan Denham that she divides mass shootings into two eras. The first ones in the late 1990s, including Columbine, were before widespread adoption of the internet, when mainstream media outlets like CNN still narrated the story. She says we're now in a second era.
Now, around 2005, 2006, when you have YouTube and media basically goes digital, the attacks begin again. But they're very different. All of them that I cover in some way cite or try to improve upon the script established at Columbine. So it may be that they approach the building in the same way. They make sure there's a security guard there. They wave during the attack, which is a citation. They wear the same kind of clothing. So they are kind of copying, but they're adding to the script each time in some way. And it is like a game, because they're trying to outdo the last attack. So what I argue is that in the second era, they don't leave any notes. There's no motive that the public can read, right? Everything we need to know about those acts happens in the act itself, where it takes place, how the citations, the ironic poses that they use. I say that all of these attacks are prompted by interaction with what's called algorithmic culture. They love gaming because it allows them to try and master the underlying algorithms of elite control that are in these games. And so the attacks themselves are forms of this. So you also have this sort of phenomenon where people no longer meet in physical spaces anymore, but the attacks take place in physical spaces where people are meeting. And this was never clearer to me than in the case in Las Vegas, because you have someone who is, what is he doing all day long for like 10 years? He's gambling. He's gaming, right? And he's trying to, basically, you know, we heard all these interviews with people about what professional gamers do. They try to beat the house, right? They try to beat the system. And it's a particular repetitive behavior that I think is very damaging to our social skills. And in fact, it may even really deform people to the point where they can no longer function in civil society. And so it's not a shock that the attacks then are against civil society.
This thesis of yours on school violence and what leads to it, how can we spin that forward into prevention? What can we learn from your research to stop these shootings from happening again and again?
I'm not saying that we don't live in a violent culture in the United States, which I think a lot of people have been saying causes this, right? And I'm certainly not saying that there's not masculinity in some way involved and that they're not racially overcoded with white perpetrators. But this is also an international problem. So you had, I cover Breivik in Sweden, you have two shooters in Germany, there's one in Brazil, and then two more in Finland, and then there's sort of isolated attacks in France and elsewhere. So it's not just an American problem. That's the first thing that I would point out, okay? So this is actually something that has to do with, it's generational, first of all. So I think that in terms of prevention, I don't know if I talk about prevention so much as I talk about prediction, that if our societies can improve our political and social, we need to redevelop our political and social relationships. And if that were to happen, I think that we might, in a generation, this might sort of peter out.
What do you mean by redevelop our political and social relationships?
As I say, this is happening everywhere. It's not just happening in the United States. It's a part of the, whatever you want to call it, the digital revolution, and a part of the kind of triumph of gaming and what people call neoliberalism, which is basically that everybody has to be constantly improving themselves as an individual. If we can redevelop more political and social strategies because humans need interaction and they need care, basically. And I think we've really said that the digital revolution is going to take care of everything for everybody. And it's not. It's making it much, much worse. You have all these former Facebook executives saying they don't let their kids use social media, right? All these elites are saying they never let their kids use social media. And I wouldn't say that social media is not useful, but in a particular context and not to the detriment of actual social, physical interaction. Learning how to read people's faces, knowing they're human, right? Knowing that they have vulnerabilities. Because I think that what happens is we've let this kind of digital culture take over for all the other things that we used to have to be forced as humans to make real hard moral decisions about. And we no longer do that now. We shirk that responsibility. And I think that that's been very detrimental to our culture. And so rethinking our relationship to digital culture is very important. I don't think that we have to get rid of it. I think it's useful. But I think we have to rethink having it replace every form of interaction or every activity that we have in our lives.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm speaking with Julie Weber, a professor in the Department of Politics and Government at Illinois State University and an author of two books on school violence. Julie, what role do you think guns play in the mass shootings we've seen, and how does that connect to the other issues you've raised about the digital revolution?
Guns are a real problem. I really do think that we need some kind of sensible gun control in this country. But I wouldn't want it to be because of one of these shootings, because I think they will continue to happen until we reform some of these social relationships and our relationship to digital culture. So I wouldn't want to have gun control and then have people say, oh, see, it happened anyway. I would much rather have people say we should have gun control because children are accidentally shooting themselves, right? Something much more relatable and widespread. So the other thing I would suggest is that because I think a lot of these individuals are, you know, they're on the verge of suicide right before they commit these acts. I hate to use the word threat because it makes every case of an unruly or antisocial person sound like a terrorist. I just don't like the equation. But I think that we need some kind of threat assessment curricula or protocol throughout the society so that people can intervene to help parents and relatives of people who are struggling, because all of these people have been struggling prior to the act and their families just don't know what to do. We don't have any answers for them, you know, and I wouldn't want it to be something like you just lock them up, right? Every time somebody makes a threat, because sometimes people make idle threats and they're just kidding or they don't get it.
We've recently marked the 5th anniversary of the Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut, one of the deadliest mass shootings ever, certainly at a school. What struck you about the media coverage of that and how we recognize that anniversary?
One thing that stuck out at me, though, was there was a lot of coverage focused on Adam Lanza's mother and how she was responsible for the shooting because she bought him the guns and he was in her care, or so she was kind of, you know, demonized a bit, or she was the first victim. But I think that what I would focus on with his mother is the one thing that stuck out at me in that 2014 report was that they said that she had developed a really dysfunctional codependent relationship with him, her son, and where he basically pretty much controlled most of what she did. So if she wore high heels, he didn't like them because they made a click on the floor, she stopped wearing them. She allowed him to cover every window in the house with black plastic bags to keep the sun out. So all kinds of, you know, controlling and codependent behaviors, but she was basically alone with him all the time. And so from what I understand, right before the attack took place, she was investigating adult group homes for him to go and live in. So I think she was trying to do the right thing, and that's why I say it might be better if we had some kind of protocol or a psychiatric intervention programs in our society to help people who can't really make these decisions themselves. You know what I mean? She wasn't thinking very clearly at that point in time. and but she was, you know, the one solely responsible for his care. So I think that some kind of assistance to these folks that are around people who are in trouble is very important, and understanding that they're not going to always be able to make rational decisions about what's happening.
Julie Weber is a professor in the Department of Politics and Government at Illinois State University and author of two books on school violence. I'm Ryan Denham.
Weber's latest book is called Beyond Columbine, School Violence and the Virtual. It's available on Amazon. You're listening to Sound Ideas on GLT.